Do we need to talk about Twitter? You came to me with a very worried textual expression on your metaphorical face about Twitter, and I need to know what's going on.
What's going on is that I'm hopelessly addicted, and I don't have an addictive personality. Hmm. I am not somebody who finds myself in situations like this very often. Quite honestly, I don't think I've ever had an addiction. I am somebody who kind of prides myself in having complete control, or a lot of control, over my routines and myself and the way that I work and the way that I do things and the way that I live my life. And, you know, I wake up every morning and I go to the gym and I do this and I do that and I write morning pages, and I love having this very productive system. And for a long time, I think I've been finding ways to convince myself that Twitter is part of that system, and it's so clearly not. Mm. And maybe it never was. I'd like to believe that it used to be, but the amount of sadness that Twitter gives me and the amount of time that it takes from me is becoming so unacceptable to my achiever brain that I'm worried because I don't know what to do. So I told you that I'm doing an experiment this week, and the experiment is this. Every time that I feel like I've learned something on Twitter, a good tweet comes across my stream, I'm bookmarking it. And every time that something hurts me, I'm bookmarking that too. So every time that somebody is writing a panicked, anxious-laden tweet, I'm bookmarking that. And every time somebody is giving me actual, good, interesting information, I'm bookmarking that. And my goal is to, at the end of the week, tally up those and see which pile is bigger. And if the pile of anxiousness is bigger, I think that, well, no, I told you that I'd do it, so it's not I think. I will be deleting my Twitter for good.
Whoa.
Because it's not worth it. I don't like that. And if it's not, I'm going to keep it. But even keeping it, there has to be some changes to the way that I use this thing, because I am not happy with the amount of time that it's taking up in my life and the way that it's making me feel.
Mm. So here's my question about where Twitter fits into your life right now, which is really a question about a topic bigger than just Twitter. Twitter is only one incarnation of how software works its way into this area of our life. My question is, how does your Twitter time split between input for you and output for you?
That is something that's really important to me, because I think a while ago, it really clicked with me that one of the things that I love is input. Like, I took a Strength Finders quiz years ago, and I realized, oh, I am high input. That is something that I really like. I love acquiring information and learning about new things and having as many sources for input as possible. So Twitter is perfect for that, right? I mean, what other website can you go to that gives you just a constant stream of information, facts, opinions, beliefs, new things that I would have never learned without it? And that's why I'm so into Twitter. It's why I've always loved it. It's why it's my social network of choice. Now, before we get to output, that is part of my problem. If Twitter wanted to be good at addicting me and keeping me addicted and never talking about it on this podcast and never saying I might delete it if it's bad, then all it would have to do is provide me with really high quality input. And that's what it did for years. Anytime I clicked it, I would open it and there would be 40 new things. And I don't know, I'd say 20 of them were interesting to me, and 10 of them, or at least 5 of them, were really fascinating links or apps or different things that just really fascinated me. So that input was really great. Now, the output is harder, because I would love to say that as much as I am high input, I'm also outputting. But honestly, it's not the case lately. I haven't been writing. I haven't been doing much with the input that I'm learning. So I'm gaining all of this input and I'm doing absolutely nothing with it. And that's problematic to me. I have actually found that iOS 12 screen time feature, I always get confused on which one is which, you know, screen time, downtime, whatever. I'll figure it out sooner or later. Mm-hmm. But I have basically put in place on my beta the ability to just say, after 15 minutes of using Twitter per day, I want you to give me that notification that says, hey, you've used Twitter for the day. So basically now, if I really want to look at Twitter, I have to look at that screen and say, give me another 15 minutes of this app. So I'm using it a lot less. And the funny thing is that having that up there and having that block has actually made me tweet more, which is kind of a weird thing.
That's a fascinating result.
Yeah, but because I can't just mindlessly scroll, I'm doing stuff in my life that I am now wanting to create output, and I'm actually outputting it on the social network that I'm keeping myself from. So it's kind of a weird thing, and now that I've been doing that, there's a few articles that are brewing inside of me, and I'm kind of live writing them on Twitter, if that makes sense. You know how, as I'm researching things, oh, that makes a good tweet. The goal would be obviously not to feel satisfied with the tweets themselves, but want to make something bigger. I remember a tweet that I read from Craig Maude a while ago, who I respect quite a bit, that basically said that his biggest problem with Twitter was that it made him lazy, and being able to tweet out this and that made him never feel the need to actually write a full essay, and he felt like that was problematic. But hey, let's celebrate the small victory here, which is that I'm actually outputting something again, because I've kind of pulled back from the amount of input that I can take in from this network. But yeah, the input is not good, and the output is non-existent, and that's not a great space to be in.
Or was non-existent. I mean, it sounds like it's starting to come together all of a sudden.
It's starting to come back. It's starting to come back because I've put this limitation on me. But that's even the thing, right, is I'm certainly not keeping myself to 15 minutes of Twitter a day. And here's what I'll say is I'm not sure if I've said this on the show before, but I've certainly said it to you. If I deleted my Instagram, I would lose very little. I would miss out on a few posts from friends, but the friends that I'm really close to, we have a relationship outside of social media, so I'm sure that I'd see it in another way at some point. But if I delete Twitter, what Twitter is to me is it's actually my search engine for the internet. I don't go to Google to search for things. I go to Twitter to search for things. And because of that, I want to be able to do those searches. So I don't want to lose out on the ability to have this search engine that's done me so well for so long. But at the same time, I don't want to find myself giving up so much time and space and attention and creating so much anxiety in my life because the search engine is inherently bad.
Okay, that's a perfect place for me to become explicit about what the context for my question about input and output is. Because what I was really getting at with that question is the ways that Twitter defines its use case or use cases. Because my recollection of how I used, of how I understood Twitter, let alone how I used it back when I used it, was that input and output were unified on Twitter. Tell me if you agree or disagree, but for me, like, reading Twitter and writing to Twitter were a continuous process to me. It was kind of like chewing on, like, the material that was out there and digesting it and like turning it into a body of some kind. It was like we were all cells in some kind of organism, and like the metabolism of it was involved input and output. And I think that it started to make less and less sense to me the more that those ways of using it diverged. And search is a sort of input, the way that you're talking about it, that you go out looking for things and it comes back to you. But it's also kind of this third case. And to me, it speaks to how fragmented the product has become into different discrete ways of using it, that you're thinking of the input problem. Like, input is something you want. Input is something that, like, your personality desires. And that part is totally unsatisfying, it sounds like. The output part is in a different state. It had dried up, but like now that you're kind of constraining the way you use Twitter, it's starting to come back. And search remains a useful aspect of Twitter for you that you don't want to use. And the thing that I can't figure out right now about Twitter as a product is whether these fragmentations are helping it or hurting it. Because the only kinds of Twitter accounts that still like really matter on Twitter are high output accounts. Accounts that have lots to say or news or, you know, that are producing things. It's becoming a feed of some kind. Not that it ever was anything else, but like now it's really, that's all it is. There isn't so much of that like digestion thing happening that like, you know, everybody is participating in the process.
Right.
It's like these big high output accounts, and then you can consume it, you know, as an info consumer, but like your output doesn't necessarily matter as a result of whatever's happening. So it's splitting into different kinds of users in a way that really, really flies in the face of what I thought was great about it at the, like, before. But if you settle into it as like something that you use specifically for one of these use cases, it seems like it still can be useful in a much narrower sense. I mean, what would be the problem with only keeping the Twitter app around to search on it? Like, couldn't you do that?
Yes, but would I do that? Because that's the thing, right? Is like the way that I search is by searching my followers. So I don't just search Twitter. I search the people that I've chosen to follow, which means I can't even really use lists because you can't search a list. You can only search your followers. Mm. So I have to follow a certain amount of people. And if I want to follow those people, there are a lot of people who I really want to have as a search engine for when I go looking for a thing, but they're not necessarily people that I want to be reading their opinions and tweets every day.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of people out there that are incredible, world-class experts in their field, but they also, especially in our current climate, are tweeting a bunch of anxiety-laden tweets about the world and how they feel about things. So that's kind of a problem because I don't really want to read those. And even that is challenging because I think that anyone who has like a good sense of understanding about the world kind of feels a need to be knowledgeable about what's going on. But then I feel totally torn between being knowledgeable and also being utterly consumed by something that makes me anxious that I can do nothing about, which is the real problem of these social networks, right? Mm-hmm. Is that every day there's something new to be worried about. But we certainly can't be worried about all of these things. It can't take up all of our time. I saw something recently online. I can't remember where or who to attribute it to. But they basically said that they constantly felt torn between, should I share this bad thing that's happening? Or will that just make the world a worse place by me sharing more negativity? And should I share this positive thing? Or is that taking away from the negative thing that needs to be focused on right now? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not good to post negative things and it's not good to post positive things. It's never a good time online to do either or. I think that the stream has gotten too wild. The stream has grown too powerful. And because of that, there is no place to slip in your life and to put in your own output in a way that feels good while there's this huge deluge of information that feels more critical or more important or more newsworthy than whatever it is that you're trying to say. And I think that's made it very challenging to find a healthy model for how to use these things. And I look around at people, their likes and who they followed. There is nobody that I can find that is having this amazing Twitter experience where they are not also feeling the ramifications of this stream growing too wide and too crazy.
Well, this is kind of what I'm asking about, is why not use Twitter via a drafts action to search Twitter and, you know, totally reorganize your following list around that way of using it and not look at the timeline. And when you need information, like launch drafts instead of Twitter and type the search query and then hit the button and it'll take you straight to those results. Like, isn't that a perfectly legitimate way of using Twitter for the exact kind of input you want and then totally bypassing the part you don't want?
It's so great. The only problem is that I'm hopelessly addicted.
Right.
You know? That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
The only problem is that there's a part of my brain that says that I need to check Twitter several times a day to see what's happening, including the bad stuff. Like, I wish that I was just addicted to the good stuff, and every time I saw a negative tweet, I thought, oh, that's horrible. I would like to see no more of this, please. But in reality, I want to go look at the Twitter Moments tab to see what's happening today, which is trash. It's all bad there. Mm. There's nothing ever good that I've learned there. I have never found good input in the Twitter Moments tab, but for some reason, I keep clicking it to see what bad thing has happened today and looking through them. You had said it once in like a text message, but you had said it's like the tabloid, my version of the tabloid.
Yep. It's the checkout aisle at the grocery store.
Exactly. And I totally see that. And I don't know how to stop my brain from wanting to look at this lurid tabloid while I also do my input searching. So
sure.
This needs to change. And the honest thing that I can say right now is that what I'm recognizing is I would rather put a big dent in my search engine and make the searches worse and have less people in my timeline, even if they're experts and even if I'd like to look at their stuff. I would rather not have them around if what they're doing is more negative than positive. So as I've been bookmarking these tweets, when I feel that ping of negativity, I look at whose account it is. And if it's somebody who is constantly making me feel this way, I'm just unfollowing that person. But you know, this is the problem, right? Is like, what a weird thing that I'm doing right now. What a weird, unnavigable thing. There's no real good way of doing this. I'm just trying to figure out the best worst way. Whatever is the least worse, I'm doing that, and that makes me feel not great. So that's why I'm at a point where I am ready to delete the entire thing if at the end of the week I see that it's more negative than positive, because I don't know, it's not a great way to feel.
Hi, Internet friends, it's John here. Internet Friends is brought to you by my work at Ablaze Interactions, where I solve communication problems for clients who work to repair our world. I can help with information architecture to transform your website, content strategy to tell the right story and reach the right audience, and writing and editing to find the authentic voice of your company or organization, your product, or your idea. Ablaze Interactions has consulted for world-renowned events, political candidates, law firms, nonprofits, and great apps on the App Store. Light up your ideas. Go to ablaze.co and let me know if you're interested in working together. Well, I certainly sympathize with that feeling of helplessness and addiction to the mode of use of Twitter, and I certainly dealt with that problem myself by deleting my account. And I haven't really looked back, except in kind of the way where you're always an addict. Like, once an addict, you're like you're always in recovery. You're never like cured. But the way I moved past that period of mourning for Twitter, which a lot of which I've written about this in other places, like in the post where I talked about deleting my account, I realized that I had been doing the mourning on Twitter for like 2 years, you know, and like just tweeting about how bad Twitter was. Like, the closure came from deleting the account, but like clearly there was still something missing. And the way I've moved past that, well, I don't think I've gotten where I want to get yet. Like, I don't think that I've replaced what Twitter was in my life yet.
Yeah.
Twitter was a community site for me for a long time, and all the things that happened to it destroyed that. Like, it the community, the band broke up, you know, and right. Like, the community wasn't there anymore. I think that does have something to do with this fragmentation of the use case that I'm talking about, where it gradually and then suddenly it became Twitter. There are people who post on Twitter, there are people who only read and don't post on Twitter, and like, ne'er the twain shall meet. You know,
right.
like it's and like, I didn't know. And the real problem was I didn't know which one I was anymore, because in the old days, I was, like I was saying before, like, I was an omnivore, and I was also like putting it out as much as I was taking it in. And I, you know, I ended up in that kind of like 5,000 followers range, which at that time was significant. Like, now, like, 5,000 followers is still, it is still firmly on the like doesn't matter side, you know? And like,
right.
but at that time, it was like there was this happy medium. Like, at the time when the activity of posting to Twitter and reading Twitter were like unified in this way I'm describing, there was a happy medium. There was a middle class on Twitter, and that's been totally eviscerated now. So that was the community that I belonged to, and I started looking for other places to find it. And, you know, it's not just community with people that I know. Like, very few people that I know that I knew before Twitter are on Twitter, were on Twitter, and probably even fewer of them still are. Like, keeping community with people that I've known for a long time has always been a sort of separate process. But finding this online community where that metabolism is happening, that input and output and sharing and replying and all of that, finding a place where that was still happening, it's still something that's ongoing. But I have started to find some solutions, and I've also started to kind of concentrate on pure output again and just put stuff out there and see if anybody picks it up and responds to it and plays off of it. I think that's what you and I are doing right here. Certainly, as we discussed, even on the very first episode, we explicitly made this connection between like what Twitter was, podcasting is sort of becoming now, where it's a place to sort of metabolize what's happening on the internet and into some kind of ongoing product that can be a kind of ambient community. Like, that's surely what's happening. But there is this community of people doing microblogging, which is the like lowercase noun that people coined to describe what was happening on Twitter in the first place. Like, to say, to answer the question, what is Twitter in the very first place? Microblogging was sort of the term that was coined. And like, now there's this community and this set of tools for doing microblogging in a platform agnostic way. Or, you know, maybe Manton Reese's micro.blog can be thought of as a platform, but I really think of it as more of a connective tissue between independent microblogs. And I'm not saying that the community is there yet, or that I've found my community there. I think that there's a certain community there of people who are nerds about microblogging, indie microblogging, the whole indie web community, which I've always been sort of peripheral to, but I've known a lot of, you know, players in it, people who are advocates for it and interested in it. It was a very read-write web kind of movement, and it, you know, it's the same people. So like, they have a community about that, and I don't want to have a community about posting things on the internet. Like, that's not super interesting to me. That's sort of circular. But there is activity happening in a stable way. It if it's growing, it's growing really slowly. Like, it hasn't hit a takeoff point yet. But I get replies there. And like, for the last 2 years of using Twitter, I never got any replies. So the activity that we used to do on Twitter is kind of finding its way out into other platforms. I mean, as we could talk all day about output, I'm sure, like creativity and making stuff and putting stuff on the internet. Like, that's kind of a core activity for both of us and something that's come up in so many different ways on this show. But I really think the key to community online in that kind of like information forest environment that we loved so much about Twitter, I think the key to having that and having community around that is this kind of unified cellular process of taking things in and putting things out and sharing them back and forth and, you know, mutually reinforcing each other's behavior. And Twitter is no longer amenable to that, but I don't think that it's dead. And I think that it may even actually still be kind of in its incubation stage. Like, it's easy to forget how short of a time it's been, you know? Like, on the one hand, yeah, 10 years. Like, I started my first Twitter account in 2009, I'm pretty sure. And so, you know, we're getting on 10 years, which is a long time in a certain sense, especially when you're talking about, like, a never-ending torrent of information that's happening every day and accelerating, like, all of history. But on the other hand, like, as far as human society goes, you know, like, we're still... like, the people who were young when Twitter started are still young now. And like, it hasn't, like, that this behavior, this thing that we did because it felt like a way of being a human being and citizen in this kind of info-centric century we live in, like, that behavior is still a young, nascent behavior. And I, you know, there's so many great starts at figuring out new tools other than Twitter for doing it and for changing it, for developing how it works. And, you know, I'm not really sure what kind of landing I'm going to stick with this argument, except to say, like, I don't regret deleting my Twitter account. And I guess I would also say I am using Twitter now, and I haven't in a year or two. But what I mean by that is I have cross-posting turned on. And I'm putting stuff out that I'm making on Twitter, but I'm also putting it on LinkedIn. And I even, micro.blog has cross-posting to Medium, and I'm finding it really satisfying because I got like 2,000 followers on Medium because of my Twitter account, like back in the day when those were kind of one account. I'm finding it really satisfying to cross-post like 300-word blog posts every day to Medium so that I'm still getting out there in whatever the hell Medium is supposed to be in this kind of environment of like people writing thinky blog posts in a closed walled garden environment. I'm putting stuff out there without having to really participate in the crap that like the bad incentives that walled garden creates. And I feel the same way on Twitter. But if somebody replies to me, I can still answer them. And it's starting to feel like the real dream of the web, to be able to wire all these things together, but still control it from an environment that feels like it's mine and that I can bend it to my will and do whatever I want. And so I wonder whether you've ever tried that. It feels like Twitter has its own kind of economy and incentives for supporting the kind of work that you're doing. And like you have a couple of websites. I follow them all via RSS and love seeing things pop up there. Do you think about it this way? Or like, what are your thoughts about the websites that you have? And like, what are they for? What do you use them for?
That's a good question. And I don't necessarily have the perfect answer for that. When I moved a couple of years ago and my life kind of got thrown in disarray, I definitely let a lot of projects drop while also starting new projects. And I have to remember that I can find myself being pretty critical, but I do have podcasts like this one, and I am pretty happy with the output that I'm creating in this world. I just am not doing the same kind of creating that I used to be. And that different kind of creating was in tandem with the input that I was having. So it's a bit of a challenge because I'm trying to think of this from the back end of what am I inputting and what am I outputting in that way. Mm-hmm. That being said, you know, I created a blog a while ago to start sharpening my writing skills, just create for my own sake, because all of the work that I was doing creatively was for a company, whereas the blog was for me. And that was really, really good. Mm. When I moved, I sort of stopped writing there. The one thing that I am doing, which again is very much based on my input, is I have a website called Collected Goodness. And whenever I read a book that's incredible or listen to a podcast episode or something along those lines that I find a lot of value in, I publish my notes and my favorite quotes from that piece on that website. It's a really great way for me to utilize the input and actually create output around the input and have this great archive that I can go back to and see all of the things that really impacted me in a cool way. So I'm using that. It's not something I'm publishing to daily or even weekly. It's whenever something comes across my path that I really, really like and I want to share something too. That being said, you know, the last time we talked was the first time that you had brought up this microblogging concept that you're now doing. And you were a little leery of committing to it, partially, I think, because of the technical side of it. But maybe there was other reasons as well. And you kind of described it as daily-ish. And I feel like you've been pretty daily, haven't you?
Yeah, other than Shabbat. I mean, that's actually what I meant by daily-ish, was that I'm never going to post on Shabbat. But okay, I also thought that like I would include like the wiggle room to not post every day if I couldn't or didn't want to.
Yeah.
But since I started it, every single day that's been eligible, I have posted something.
And I have found that I love that. And it has been very inspiratory for me to think about writing again in that capacity. Because for a long time, I was publishing daily-ish, basically Monday through Friday. And I was always finding something to put out in the world, and I really enjoyed it. And I definitely felt better than I do right now about my habits. And to be fair, you know, in this sort of dormant period of writing for me, I've still been writing for myself. I often do morning pages or something along those lines. I'm just not publishing it anywhere. So it's not like I've just, you know, completely stopped that I'm just mindlessly browsing Twitter from sun up to sundown, but I'm not as happy with the process. Now, it's what you just said is interesting in that I think it's cool that you're starting to feel like you're harnessing tools in a way that you haven't in a while.
Yep.
Because, I mean, I don't know the last time that you said something nice about Medium, and I don't even mean that in a bad way about Medium itself. I just think that this is kind of the time that we're in, as we look around at all of these different platforms and we say, what are these platforms even for? And if we can't figure out a way to utilize them, it just feels kind of unbuoyed and we feel strange about the things in front of us. But here you are, you have a new project, and you're finding a way to really utilize these platforms for the project in a way that feels very healthy and also very significant, which is great. Now, you are using Twitter, mm-hmm. but you aren't using Twitter.
Nope. I'm pure output, like I was saying. In fact, I have two accounts that are pure output.
Right.
Because I have a project that's kind of equivalent to your Collected Goodness, which is not a blog, though there is an RSS feed. But I have my Pinboard account hooked up to if with several various RSS feeds for a bunch of different topics. And that posts the things that I'm reading online with, like, manually, I invoke the shortcut to bookmark something on Pinboard, and it posts stuff to a feed. And so when I'm just starting to read something, it goes out over the Twitter account Ablaze, which is, you know, actually was a separate account from my main Ablaze account. But when I deleted that account, I just moved the username over because it's too good not to keep. And then when I like something, or when I just find it kind of enduringly useful for a particular topic, I use a set of tags that all also turn into tweets with that tag. And there's like emoji coding to like make it easy to scan. And that output of my reading, it's limited to just like articles that I read on the web. So it doesn't include all of the books and other stuff. And I've thought about ways to do that, but I haven't figured it out yet. But like all along, I mean, I've been doing this for years. There's a service called reading.am that sort of invented the mode, but it was like it was a network unto itself. Like people who used reading.am were signaling to each other what they were reading and finding stuff to read there. I still love that service enough that I also have an automated trigger to post everything I bookmark on Pinboard to that. So I still have my output going out there, but this Twitter account, you know, it's actually many years old of kind of automatically sharing the stuff I'm reading. And there are like 130 people following it, which is more than 20.
Right.
And like, I don't know, a lot of them are probably bots, but like I do occasionally get like faves or retweets from that account, especially from the people who wrote the stuff. And I find that kind of valuable too. I like just even just the very idea of sending the signal to somebody who's toiling away writing stuff for the internet, like I am so familiar with doing, that somebody's out there reading it. Like just that alone as a byproduct of something I'm already doing, like that to me is a reason to keep that account running and keep it auto posting thing. But right now, so now I also have started this blog. And I can talk a lot more about why I chose the format that I chose. But as far as where that material is going, you know, the most important thing to me was that it lived on its own domain that is mine, that is sort of the home of the project. And, you know, Medium could have been this. It tried to be for a while. In fact, you and I both, I don't know what the status of yours is as far as whether it's still on Medium or not. I also had a Medium publication with its own domain that I was going to use as sort of like the last project before this one of kind of blogging about something all the time.
Right.
But now Medium has completely turned away from that and the idea of having its publications actually be blogs with their own domain. So Medium cannot be this for me anymore. So micro.blog it is. But one of the things that micro.blog has built in is cross-posting to a few of the key services, and I'm able to use If This Then That to kind of bring in the last one that it doesn't have, which is posting to public Facebook pages. It does have cross-posting for a personal Facebook account, but that is deactivated right now, so I'm not doing that. But the API for posting to Facebook pages is actually surprisingly robust, so I was able to set up automated cross-posting from RSS to If This Then That to my Facebook page. And now when I post something to Grindwell, it goes out in all of the places. And that is not, it's not something that I've cared that much about for a while, but I also haven't really had a project, a regular blogging project for a while. And now that I do, I'm really glad that I can get it to people wherever they are, because I believe that people should be able to use whatever tools they want. That said, I am very happy that it's also kind of a hosted web first, RSS first platform that I'm using. And so like the canonical way to follow this blog is by RSS, whether it's in an RSS reader or in a podcast client, because as I could get more into, I'm taking advantage of one of the tools that Manton built for micro.blog, which is an iOS app. Well, really, it's an iPhone only app called Wavelength that allows you to post audio files in your micro.blog blog posts that go out as a perfectly formatted podcast feed. So I have a second podcast now. It's just one that's only 2 or 3 minutes long, but it's every day.
I love that format. I think it's really cool. I think the first person who I ever saw do that was Jeffrey Sidoris, who's a photographer that has a podcast called On Taking Pictures. And he doesn't have the exact same thing that you do, but he has a website full of essays, and all of his essays are available as either text or audio, and he reads them aloud. And I think that's really fun. And I think what you're doing is even nicer, because as someone who has been reading / listening to these, I read half of them through Twitter or RSS, and I listen to the other half of them through my podcast app. It happens to be, you know, wherever I am when it comes across my way.
That's exactly what I want, too. I want them to be considered peers as ways of interacting with this material, because I want to reach people wherever they are so that they can come back to me from wherever they are, however they want, and fulfill the other side of that equation that we've been talking about, where like input and output are a unified process. And it's, you know, it's harder to do in podcasting, although I've seen some sort of fits and starts, and also have a friend who's like really dead serious about audio driven social networking and like having audio replies to audio posts. And you know, I'm pretty interested in that idea. I feel like I would do that a lot if I had a bunch of microcasts of people that were interested in specific things. I think I would respond to them, you know, because like even if I'm out on a walk or whatever I'm doing, like listening to them, like that's usually a situation where I could respond by voice. And, you know, it's the flexibility of all this that makes me love it so much. I mean, that's kind of one of the key technical requirements for me of doing this, was that I wanted to be able to publish this blog using an iPhone only. And obviously, I want to use an iPad too, like when it's more comfortable. But actually, I found the phone to be the most comfortable way to do it, because I've set these constraints of like 300 words max, and that equates to 3 minutes max. And, you know, I write it first, and then I plug my Lightning earbuds in to my phone, which has a surprisingly great microphone for like one voice that's very close to the mic. I kind of hold the cord tight so that the mic is right in front of my mouth, and that's all I have to do. I read the text that I just wrote from Drafts and then recorded into the new Voice Memos app, which now, as of the latest public beta, doesn't just devour the file and make it disappear into the ether anymore. Now it works. So I just launch the Voice Memos app from Control Center, then like have this file already recorded. I go to Wavelength, which is the iOS app that Manton made for hosted microblogs that want to use the podcasting features. I import the file from Files, and then I can use the tools in Wavelength very easily to kind of cut the tail, the beginning and end little tail noises off of the file. And then it's ready to go. I copy the text from Drafts, I paste it into Wavelength, and I press go, and it uploads to my blog and then auto posts to all of these places. It couldn't be any easier. And like, I could do it from anywhere. And that was a concern for me. Having too much friction around this kind of project would really kill the joy of it for me. And obviously, like, that's what these social media products are all about overcoming. They're all about making it effortless to stay engaged and keep posting. And the problem with the nerdier tools has always been that it's too hard to use compared to something effortless like Twitter. But that's not the case anymore.
Oh, man.
I mean, setting it up was non-trivial, but it was worth it, because now I don't have to do anything. And I just like automatically, like I do only the things that I'm supposed to do, write and record audio. And then that's it. And it goes out over every single place that it could possibly go out. And I haven't had that much engagement yet. But you know what else I haven't had is any statistics telling me how I'm doing. And like, I don't want to know.
Yeah.
It's weird. I have no desire. Like with this show, with our show, like I'll be honest, like I love to check the stats on this show because we're putting like tons of hours of work into every episode, and it's something that we care a lot about, you know, reaching people. And maybe that's unhealthy, but I mean, that's just the way it is. But like with this project that I'm doing every day, like if I looked every day and saw like 6 people read this post or downloaded this episode, that would be demoralizing. And the best thing about Micro.blog is that it doesn't have any of that stuff.
It's a feature.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, he's been explicit about how like not showing followers was a deliberate decision. Like, of course, he can surface what accounts follow other accounts on Micro.blog, but he chose not to. He only shows which ones those accounts are following. He's even developing like the feature of what it shows you when you click on somebody's following list. It now highlights, if you're using one of like the Micro.blog first party apps, it shows you how many accounts that person is following that you aren't following. And what's fascinating is that it's often like two or three, which is, you know, really interesting because it means that there's a ton of overlap in this community. But that's what he's designing for. And I'm going into people's like profiles, seeing which accounts they follow that I haven't followed yet and following them, because it's trying to make this whole thing as reciprocal as possible. And so it's all about what the input is. And then you take your input and you concentrate on your output, and you don't worry who's receiving that output. Because if they have something to say, they will make a post of their own to reply. And they do. And it's, you know, I've gotten like one reply to a Grindwell post, but I'm so happy about that because it's part of this growing living thing. And Twitter hasn't felt like that in so long. And it's all because I don't have any of those perverse incentives about engagement. I'm just doing my thing and other people are next to me doing their thing. And since they're all unique things, they all have their own requirements. Not everybody cross-posts their thing to Medium or LinkedIn. Like, why am I even doing that? Why am I cross-posting my little 300-word blog post about meditation to LinkedIn? I think it's because I want my professional networks to understand that mindfulness is something that matters to me. And I don't care one iota whether any of those LinkedIn contacts I have like actually read the post. I care that it is representing what I'm doing out there to anyone who's looking. And like, that's just my own way of approaching this. And everybody else who's doing any form of microblogging, whether they're using micro.blog or not, is approaching it their own way. And I think that that is critical to feeling like the freedom and permission to do your thing, instead of feeling like you have to conform to what Twitter wants you to do.
Hello, internet friends, it's Drew, and I want to tell you about Keyhouse. There's a quote from Kurt Vonnegut that I read, tucked away in an essay he wrote about the seasons, where he said that he thought that the idea of four seasons was a lie. Instead, we should have six. Fall doesn't move to winter, and winter doesn't move to spring. Instead, he thought the season should be like so. Summer, fall, locking, winter, unlocking, and spring. I believe there's a beautiful poetry to the idea that creation itself requires a time of unlocking before anything of substance can bloom. And perhaps you're listening to this message right now, stuck between what you're doing and what you want to do for the rest of your life, realizing that you might be in that cruel season of unlocking too. Find your own space for unlocking. Go to Keyhouse, KEYHOU.SE, and let's find the key. One of the things that I've always said about artistry in today's age is that we have a real problem in that artists need both money and attention to do what they do. And our social networks and platforms have focused solely on attention, given no money, and made attention itself this thing that's totally prized and valuable when it isn't. People that are posting a lot of art on Instagram stories are not being paid for their art. But if they look and they see that they have 750 views on an Instagram story, they feel good, which is good to feel good, but it doesn't necessarily translate to a healthy social network or healthy creative platform. And this conversation has reminded me that I too fall victim to that need for attention. And what I think is so valuable about the way that you've set things up is that you've put attention at such a low priority that it doesn't affect or impact what you're creating. You're creating for creation. You're creating for your own happiness. You're creating for your own sense of identity and self and creative health. And because of that, you aren't looking at the metrics as the reason to do anything, which sounds so much better than the way that I feel like I do things sometimes. Collected Goodness is an example of a project that I have zero idea how much traffic it ever gets because it is for me. And now that I'm thinking about it, that is why I like it. And that is why I'm still doing it, where my blog became more about the metrics than it did about what I was creating. And man, I think that I need to have a new way of thinking about what the primary platform is for what I'm creating, because it really does change the way that I think about it. And not only does it change the way that I think about it, but it changes the way that I feel about it. For a long time, what I've known is that I have a lot of like platform health anxiety. Mm. I have an idea for a project. Okay, where am I going to put that project? Okay, will that platform that I'm going to put the project on still be around in 5 years? And if I can't answer that really clearly, now all of a sudden I'm not as happy about the project as I was before. But I need to be thinking about the healthiness of it too from the perspective of what it's prioritizing.
I think I might have hesitated earlier in this conversation to use the word platform for micro.blog. Like I certainly put an asterisk next to the idea that micro.blog is a platform. Because like, yeah, like as I just explained, it has that like true kind of mental health version of health in mind by sort of only exposing you to the pro-social feedback and not any of the kind of ego-driven antisocial feedback. But it also is fundamentally, philosophically healthy in the other sense, in that platform health sense, because these posts, like micro.blog could go away tomorrow, and that would bum me out a lot, but I would be able to get all of the files, like all the only things that I've posted are markdown files with one URL for an audio file in the last paragraph of the post. Mm. And I could put those anywhere, and I could create any new kind of website at grindwell.org with the same exact URL structure and like just replace the file, like move the files over, and I would be back up and running tomorrow. And that is really satisfying thing to remember, but it's also like so easy for me to pay $10 a month to a provider to keep this up and running for me. And I know I've been talking this game for so long. I've been talking this game since the app.net days, that like that's the way that you align the user and the platform is by having the user support it. And $10 a month might sound kind of steep for what this is, but the thing is, it's actually one of three incentives that I'm using to keep this project going. Like it's sort of a gym membership, you know, where like I'm paying $10 a month, I got to keep doing it. But I also have the incentive to write every day, which is pretty important to my identity as a writer. I think any writer would agree with the statement that like, if you're not writing, it's pretty hard to recognize yourself as a writer. So like that was one of the fundamental reasons I wanted to do this. And then the second one is to do the exact same thing with my meditation practice, where if I have this kind of external accountability to sit every day or every day-ish because I have this other project riding on the insights I get from that, then I'll do it more. And it's all working. And then, you know, add in on top of that, like I'm paying $10 a month, so might as well keep going. It's a perfect storm in a good way. Like it's the thing that it's intrinsically motivating to me because I have these three reasons to do it. Mm. And none of them are dependent on anybody else. But the platform side, that's a relief that's in the back of my mind that lets me keep doing it this way, because I know that I could keep this blog going in some form forever. If I had to move it, I could.
I'm glad that this conversation moved from platforms to creative output in the way that it did, because I think that I needed the reminder that the whole reason these platforms exist, as far as I'm concerned, is for the output, is for the creation process. And maybe part of the reason that I feel so unsatisfied is not just because the input hasn't been good, but it is legitimately because the output hasn't been that great either. And I'll see a more healthy change in my own life just in changing that, in maneuvering myself back to a more healthy output life as opposed to almost an entirely input-driven one. I think that regardless, I need to get to a place where my platforms feel as healthy as yours do, because it's you seem to be in a better space than I am as far as how you feel about all of the networks and platforms that are in your life.
Yeah, I'm certainly getting there. I mean, I still feel like there's nowhere that I want to hang out all the time. I want micro.blog to become that place, but like I'm not convincing that many people to move over there, even though you can do it for free because you can connect any blog to it and you can have a blog for free, or you might already have a blog, which is how I was doing it for the longest time. But I created a separate account for this because I wanted a hosted blog with the podcasting feature. But I'm not saying go join micro.blog. I'm saying let's concentrate on what felt healthy in the old days of that process of give and take and of collaboration on sort of the ongoing information questions of the day. And like, let's go towards it. Instead of letting the platforms tell us how to behave, like, let's remember what that community behavior feels like. Let's just concentrate on doing the stuff that brings us together. And eventually, as people become more and more technologically literate, which is obviously happening, they'll gravitate towards it because they'll realize that it's getting easier all the time.